Hi, this is Tiffany Marchink, and I am the host of this podcast, the Medal of Honor Podcast, Veteran Stories of Strength, Courage, and Perseverance. Now, if you haven't heard me share this before, this podcast is set to be a platform to provide healing for the person sharing their personal story, hope for the person that's listening, and help and education for all who need it. Today, we're going to be focusing on that third purpose by talking about help, education, and resources that we can take advantage of. So what am I talking about? I had the opportunity to sit down with Dr. Mark L. Gordon, who is a neuroendocrinologist, about what he is doing with traumatic brain injury research. You can check out his website, tbihelpnow.org, and learn more about him and what he does. Now, there are services that he provides for veterans and active duty. Since 2009, his company that he started, the Millennium Health Centers, has provided services to our military heroes with the support and caring that has set them apart from all others. Their laboratory testing and treatment protocols that they provide were based upon the unique needs of those exposed to combat and non-combat traumas. At the present, they have over 1,500 service members in their program. For civilians, they provide support as well. Even though they may not have been injured in a theater of war, many civilians have experienced trauma that can generate the same level of inflammation in the brain as some have exposed to an IED, or football, or a motor vehicle accident, assault, or simply a fall. The cause might be different, but the effect on the brain are the same. So whether it be a football player in a game experiencing that trauma of impact, a service member who has experienced a traumatic event causing some brain damage in combat with an IED, or somebody who has experienced a sexual assault, there is trauma involved in that. No matter what the case is, though, Dr. Mark Gordon talks about how the root cause with many of these traumatic brain injuries, if not all, is due to inflammation. I would have never associated or identified the root cause of a traumatic brain injury being inflammation. Now, when I use the word root cause, of course, that traumatic event is the root cause. But when I use that word, I mean that once that traumatic event has happened, there is inflammation in the brain that causes a lot of the issues that people have. One of the companies that Dr. Mark Gordon has started is called the Millennium. Now, with the Millennium, they have a lot of clinics across the nation, but they also have a website where you can purchase some of the nutrients and vitamins that they have created. If you want to learn more about this, you can go to his other website called MillenniumHealthStore.com. Again, all lowercase letters, all one word, MillenniumHealthStore.com. So now let's tune into this episode as I spend time talking to him about what traumatic brain injury is and what it is not.
Okay. Yeah, we have in the movie, we have a cadet from Annapolis who was brutally raped. Mm-hmm. And 7 months later, she ends up coming back to normalcy off her medication.
Mm-hmm.
Because, we talk about physical trauma and non-physical trauma. The physical trauma is obviously you're a boxer, you're exposed to an IED, you're exposed to combat training. When you're in basic boot camp, you're exposed to a lot of the same things that are out in the field of a battle. And we don't put the two and two together that even in training mode, you can have, significant issues. It's like we lost three Marines here in California in the helicopter crash. They were in training. So it's just as deadly in training as it is out in the field of battle. So we ignore or we don't see the fact that all the basic training can create the same problems as being exposed to traumas in the battlefield. So with rape, what happens is there's a physical component as well as a psychological component. And the combination of the two are additive to changing the chemistry of the brain. And that's the area I work in, the area of neuroendocrinology, which deals with how our environment, without physical contact can influence the chemistry of the brain and lead to the same turning on of the endocrine, immune, hormonal, neurological systems in the brain that a physical contact can do. And I mean, it's so much easier to see, oh, yeah, I've been hit on the head, or yeah, I was exposed to an IED, or yeah, I was knocked unconscious from whatever. And that we can equate out very clearly. But when we talk about psychiatric or psychological or psycho stressors, social stressors, as being the button that gets pressed to create the same chemical change in the brain, we found what it is all about, something called fractalkine. Fractalkine is a hormone produced by neurons that maintains the balance of inflammation and anti-inflammation in the brain. And when you have a stressor, what happens is the fractalkine isn't made and the brain goes on fire. And the longer you're in or exposed to the stressor, whether or not it be a bad family environment or the fact that you're, incarcerated or in a situation where it's chronic stress, or even being in a war zone where you're not actually out in the field battling, but just living like the people in Ukraine that are chronically exposed to the stress of bombs coming in, people being killed, buildings being blown up, and just knowing about that, just having, recognition of these, it generates in the brain this inflammatory process. And we know it because we have people who have no physical trauma, and then we have people with physical trauma looking at their laboratory testing, and they're very similar. Putting them on the same treatment, what happens is they both get better. It's last year's study, 77%, whether or not they had TBI or whether or not they had PTSD. And personally, I'm not a great believer in PTSD because in a project we did last year, well, for the last 18 years, what happens is PTSD is a missed TBI. You had a traumatic brain injury. And it's been missed. So what happens over the course of time, you start adding on symptoms that they keep on pointing at PTSD. Now, in the study we did last year, we looked at a random group of guys who came into this sub-study. And in the group, there was a population that had, from the VA, a diagnosis of traumatic brain injury. And then there was another group that had a diagnosis of PTSD. And when we interviewed or looked at their medical records, their intake forms, every single one of the guys that were given by the VA the diagnosis of PTSD had a TBI. They had a TBI prior to. So, as I put it, it's TBI is a small fire that starts in the brain. And if you put it out, you save the brain. You save, let's say, a house is on fire, you save the house. But if you ignore the fact that they've had a TBI with that small fire being started, the fire starts spreading into different rooms of the house or different areas of the brain, leading to more disruption of the healthy chemistry of the brain and more damage to areas, physical damage to areas that are important for our personal and our personality, our psychology, and our cognition. And there's a doctor in Washington, in Bethesda, Maryland, by name of Daniel Pearl, who studied the brains of 20,000 veterans who had died with a diagnosis of PTSD. He found in 100% of these people, these veterans, he found lesions in the brain, just like what is found in CTE, in chronic traumatic encephalopathy. And he asked a very important question. He said, how is it that these 100%, quote unquote, 100% psychiatric cases, theoretically, if they're 100% psychiatric and PTSD, there should be no history of physical trauma. He said, how is it possible that these PTSD cases had physical findings? There's got to be something else causing it. And that something else causing it is this fractalkine leading to inflammation, pro-inflammation, and damage to the brain.
To take a step back, as far as differentiating a TBI and PTSD, is it fair to say that a traumatic brain injury is going to have some sort of like concrete, like you said, the lesions on your brain? No, okay,
No,
that's not true. So what, how
no.
do you distinguish the two then?
Well, in studies that have been done in radiology, looking at people who were knocked unconscious and had an MRI, a CT scan, and MRI done, they were negative. They were negative. I mean, it would be, well, it would be nice, but for the dogma of defining what constitutes a TBI and PTSD, for those who like to diagnose TBIs by finding contusion of brain matter, bleeding, subdural hematoma, finding these little white dots, which is calcification, which is really axons, neurons that have torn and leaked material that the body responded by calcifying. But there's no technology that picks up inflammation. They pick up structural changes, but it's really the inflammation that needs to be looked at. And we do have a whole bunch of blood tests that are called cytokines or interleukins, IL-1, 1B, 6, and tumor necrosis factor alpha, and a slew of others, which are markers for inflammation in the body, not specifically in the brain. So the problem with drawing blood and using these interleukins, part of the immune system, is that they could be coming from your knee. It could be coming from a sinus infection. It could be coming from your gut, from an ulcer or dysbiosis, from not having a good bacteria balance in the gut. So those cytokines are therefore diluted. Their selectivity is diluted because they're throughout the entire body. So they're not good to be used. That's why there's so much money being spent looking for a unique biomarker of TBI. Well, they've spent tens of millions of dollars a year in different facilities looking for these markers. We already have them. We already have markers. Markers like the brain's production of prolactin or dopamine or luteinizing hormone, just a whole bunch of these neurosteroids, these hormones that are produced in the brain, that when there is inflammation, will knock out your brain's ability to make these hormones. And since 2013, major articles have been coming out, or major for me, because they influence the way I look at this world of neuroendocrinology and trauma. Disruption of the neuroendocrine system in the brain, and products that are produced by cells of the brain called glial cells, specifically astrocytes, that produce a compound called PGE2, which helps the brain to generate the signals to release hormones. And under inflammation, the brain, the part of the brain called the hypothalamus, can't produce this signaling hormone called gonadotropic releasing hormone, which turns on the pituitary to make luteinizing hormone and follicle stimulating hormone. FSH, follicle stimulating hormone, is fertility, and luteinizing hormone is for our hormones. It's the rate limiting hormone that allows cholesterol to convert to all the steroid hormones in our body, from estrogen, estradiol, estrone, estriol, testosterone, DHT, DHEA, cortisol, pregnenolone, allopregnenolone, progesterone. All these hormones come from the conversion of cholesterol down this steroid pathway, this very broad and diffuse steroid hormones. And if you don't not making it in the brain, that's what leads to greater inflammation. It's because our hormones that we refer to as gender hormones or reproductive hormones, these hormones have many actions. We call it pleiotropic. They have the action of dropping inflammation. It's not only stimulating, like testosterone, libido and good sleep and sense of well-being and assertiveness, competitiveness, memory, recall, and the ability to learn new things in both males and females, but it also stimulates an anti-inflammatory interleukin called IL-10, and then shuts down four bad pro-inflammatory hormones in the brain. So trauma, I mean, they found the mechanisms. So we see that, but very few people are looking closely at that mechanism to explain why, after 24 years in the military and having, not been actively deployed in a war zone, where you develop symptoms. Yes, physical trauma, rape-like physical trauma, is extremely offensive to the biochemistry of the brain, because it sets in motion stress. Stress causes cortisol. Cortisol shuts off the fractalkine.
So for me, I'm going to say about 4 or 5 years after the sexual assault happened, and I had just retired from the military, I went for my annual women's exam. And the provider ended up saying, "We're going to have to try this another time," because she saw how red my face was, and I had tears coming down my eyes. The thing that she kept on telling me to do, she said, "Tiffany, you've got to relax." And I was able to relax everywhere but where I needed to.
Gotcha.
And I didn't know how to make myself relax. So is that an example of like the chemistry being not where it should be in my brain? Because the rest of my body was relaxed, but I could not do what I needed to do.
Yeah, you had a specific focal reaction to that, to the exam. I assume it was, for a gynecological exam, and therefore all those tapes kept replaying. And with that is fear, cortisol, vigilance, cortisol, recall, cortisol. So it's everything, it's stressing you out, and that's why you're losing the natural control, or the fact that you just deal with it. So, and that could indicate that there are certain hormones that are deficient in the brain. And the most common one we see with anxiety and depression and insomnia is pregnenolone, progesterone, and allopregnanolone, which are three very important regulatory hormones in the brain. So important that about 7 years ago, pharmaceutical company ended up making a product that they ended up calling brexanolone, not the trade name, but the chemical name brexanolone, which is identical to allopregnanolone that our body makes. And it's only $34,000 a year. And what it does is it helps with postpartum depression, anxiety. They haven't even gotten it into the sleep area, because in our population, we've got about 1,600 veterans in our program, and it's not for life. They get in, they get better, they leave. Because once you fix the chemistry, or you reestablish a homeostasis, a balance of all these hormones, the brain recovers. Yes, there are certain things that we can give them that will help to accelerate it. There are some new peptides out there, which are short chain proteins that stimulate the brain to recover. Supplements that drop the inflammation in the brain, and as well as replenishing the hormones. In women that go premenopausal and then menopausal, there's always a change in the hormones, and frequently they're associated with either cognitive or behavioral or emotional, psychological changes in the individual. And so we run a biomarker panel that we developed over about 14 years that looks for the imbalances that occur with a history of trauma. And you don't have to have loss of consciousness. The majority of people we see don't have loss of consciousness. And looking at their lab results, comparing to someone that had loss of consciousness, you frequently see similarities, same things. So we get a 28-point biomarker panel, and that panel tells us what's going on in terms of deficiencies. We have a software package, that application that analyzes it at a very high, very deep interpretation. Most physicians, when we look at laboratory results, we look like an accountant at line by line by line, when we know very well that the body doesn't do that. It doesn't do line by line, make sure each one, it's how they interact with each other. Very important, these interactions. And these interactions give us different levels or give us different interpretations of line by line. So we have a computer program, an AI program that analyzes it. And in addition, it looks at any of the medication that you might be on, because there are a lot of medications that influence our body's ability to make hormones or to exceed in the production of certain hormones. Medication like bupropion, Wellbutrin, can stimulate growth hormone production. Very commonly used product
I
in.
take it.
Yeah, very commonly used. I mean, that's why I bring it up a lot of times in programs that I interact with, is because it's probably one of the most common ones. There are other medications that have very harmful effects on the chemistry of the brain. Narcotics are one of them. The medication that came out originally for diabetic neuropathy, they're using it for everything in the body. You know, the VA's notorious for using it for everything. And it actually blocks three to four of our hormones in the brain. So
Wow.
people feel not well.
So with that, this is, and this question is personal to me and for many veterans who are getting any mental health care.
Right.
You end up developing your own pharmacy at the house.
Yes.
And there's a point I know for me, and I've heard other veterans struggle with, is saying, you know what, I'm done with the pills. I'm not old enough to be on this. My medicine cabinet looks like I'm 80 or 90 years old, and I'm only 30, 40, not even 50 yet. So, with the chemicals of medications having an impact on the hormones in your brain, and you get to certain ones where you maybe with your doctor wean off of, how, I mean, like, how does that work with your natural chemicals getting back into a place where they should be, if that's the right way to ask that.
I understand it. So basically, what you're asking is, okay, so you've got people who are on a multitude of medications that we know influence their hormones. How do we assess and then start them on treatment? Well, the software has built into it meters for, okay, we know you're on this drug, and we know that your hormone measurement is higher than it should be, which is associated with this medication. Or you look at statin drugs that lower cholesterol. They have a can cause irreversible type 2 insulin resistant diabetes. So it says, okay, you're on a statin drug and your insulin level is sky high and your vitamin D is low. And that's another thing that it does. So it integrates that. So the question then becomes, how do I start getting off of all this medication when I'm on protocol? We just call our treatment protocol. And what happens is, in our population, is we monitor everybody once a month through a form called a monthly program questionnaire, where you fill it out. So we can see every 30 days on treatment how you're doing, because you rate yourself in 25 areas of psychological, physiological, and physical functioning. So this morning I went through a stack of these MPQs, and people writing in saying, oh, the ringing in my ears now is gone. because it's an inflammatory. We have 109 people in a tinnitus study, and they all get, and they're getting better at different degrees. We have sleep. Most of the people that we see come in and they have insomnia. And the reason for insomnia is because you're missing the hormones in the brain that help you to sleep besides melatonin. Melatonin is just one of them. The other one is GABA. And there are three hormones that help to regulate your GABA. So I've had people come into the office and I ask them, okay, so how many hours do you sleep a night? Or how many hours are you in bed a night? And one Marine said, oh, 13 hours. I said, man, you must wake up feeling great in the morning. He said, no, on the contrary, I wake up feeling like I've never put my head on the pillow. And I'm looking at his lab results, seeing that he has these three hormones, two of them don't exist in his body because trauma will shut it off. Okay. Whether or not it's emotional trauma, stress trauma, or physical trauma, blast wave trauma, IED, repetitive gunfire, standing behind a Abrams tank as it shoots off its rounds, shoulder-mounted armament, you know, Stinger, Gustav, CG, you know, all these things that you used to play with, right? And, you know, tossing hand grenades, mortar. I've got a veteran from Canada, Kelsey Sheeran, who is maybe 5'2". She used to run in Afghanistan the 777s, which are these huge artillery, you know what huge artillery, you know. And some of the guys that said, no, we didn't work these 777s, but we were a quarter mile away, and every time it shot off a round, it would knock everything off their walls and their hutch and their hooch hutch. Okay. So even that creates blast wave trauma. And that's the majority of the veterans that I have been seeing. But I also see those who are technical engineers on carriers for jet engines or for the 18, 16s, whatever number is attached to it. And it's the what they found many years ago is that high decibel, low frequency, so that rumbling of the engines creates the same damage in the brain as blast wave or being hit on the brain, hit on the head.
Now, I have a
Okay.
random question.
Sure.
I know so many, everything's Latin or it's all Greek to me, but you know, Latin words.
Yeah.
When you said GABA was one of the hormones,
Right.
I am taking a nerve pain gabapentin
That's
medication.
the one I was focusing on without
Okay.
saying it.
Okay. Well, hey, I said it. I take it. So
Yeah.
is that, even though, the justification for my taking it is because of nerve pain in my back, is it also something? No, it does it have an impact on the hormone? Okay.
I don't take patients. I don't take military if they're on that medication. I don't take military if they're on one or two medications, narcotics and that medication. And I have case after case after case after case after case that they said, yeah, I was put on it for stomach pain. I was put on it for neck pain. I was put on it for back pain. If you look at work, I was, you know, in my coming up years when that drug came out specifically for peripheral neuropathy associated with diabetes. But because it was nerve pain, a very specific inflammatory induced by the inflammation created by having high level of sugar in the body, that was its application. But now I see it for a toothache. I see it for earaches. I see it for everything. And what it does is it totally disrupts this pathway of cholesterol to pregnenolone to progesterone, pregnenadiol to allopregnanolone, to cortisol, 11-hydroxycortisol, to aldosterone, you know, to cortisol. And it interrupts that entire pathway, alters it. And then you look at,
Man.
yeah, and then you look at the levels. I mean, the gentleman that just came on board, he was on 300 milligrams three times a day.
Oh, wow.
300 milligrams three times a day. It wasn't helping his neck pain that he was told, just give it another year. Okay.
And
Yeah.
that's where I am. And I'll tell you what, you'll probably appreciate this. Same thing. There's also, because I'm telling on myself, and I'm really telling on the VA. I'm just the person that's at
They're
stake
trying to
for
do
it.
their best.
Yeah,
They're trying
but
to do their
I
best.
think the other nerve pain medication that I'm taking is Sildenafil or Sildenafil, something to that effect. I'm not 100% of the pronunciation,
Right.
but everything that you're saying right now, I'm like, dang it, where were you like 10 years ago in my life? But like for example, like my hormones are out of whack anyway because I have the polycystic ovarian syndrome. My cholesterol is high. And then on top of that, when you look at my A1C and my glucose levels, those are perfect. When I get those labs back, my A1C and my glucose are right in the center of those ranges that it needs to be.
But where is your insulin?
It's good too. That's the thing. I am not diabetic. I'm not
Between
pre-diabetic.
3 and 10, between 3 and 10 for your insulin.
Oh, I don't know the exact number, so I'd have to look that up.
Yeah.
But
Yeah. I mean, you're talking about PCOS. I just sent out two articles on why that can occur due to certain deficiencies of minerals in the body. I'm not a great believer in PCOS. My daughter and I treat them. Under the, they come in with PCOS. I remove the label and look at the hormones, correct the hormones, correct the minerals and whatever, and they get better.
Now,
Okay.
with that, I was listening to you on the Joe Rogan show or the Joe Rogan Experience or what, and you said something that I would have never thought about. Speaking of these hormones, I would have never labeled vitamin D as a hormone. I've always just known it to be vitamin
Vitamin D.
D.
Yep.
So what makes it and because I also looked this up and I don't know, I might have this close to correct if it's not correct. Is it considered a hormone because it's not providing some sort of essentialness to your core of nope?
No,
Okay.
it's called the SECO hormone. SECO, SECO hormones are those hormones that are produced from cholesterol. So steroid hormone genesis comes all from cholesterol. That's why when you mess with cholesterol, you create problems. There are a number of articles out there talking about when you drop cholesterol too low, you burn out all the hormones in the brain. You burn out the ability of the body to make hormones because cholesterol gets converted downline, vitamin D. Cholesterol gets converted to testosterone, estradiol, progesterone, cortisol through these cascades of biochemical transformations. Okay. So, yeah. Cholesterol, very, very important.
And see, with that, here's what I'm looking at now because, like, my HDL and LDL, those numbers, they're either within range or slightly out. But my issue is my triglycerides are so high, sometimes they're not even with any kind of measurable range. So I take a statin, which impacts vitamin D, which
It
impacts.
impacts your insulin, it impacts your vitamin D, it impacts your brain function, impacts 35 hormones in your brain.
So
Okay.
how, why do we?
Cholesterol elevation we find in two groups of our patients. One, low testosterone, male or female.
I have more than I need.
Okay, and that's your PCOS is what you're saying.
Correct, because I grow
Must, yeah.
the facial hair like the way the gynecologist described it to me when I first got diagnosed with that was. Because she told me to go like 2 weeks without doing anything to the hair. And she said, you look like a, 12, 13-year-old boy who's just hitting puberty, getting that little bit of a goatee. And she said, so
Facial
that's,
hair, back of the knuckles, umbilical.
on my
Yeah.
toes.
Yep.
So, yeah. And so
So.
what's
What have they
hard,
tried you? Yeah.
I'll say what's hard with me, well, I'll tell you, I probably this will answer your question. They had put me on birth control for a long time. And up until about 2 years ago, that women's health appointment that I was mentioning, they ended up doing a inserting an IUD because
Okay.
they took me off of the birth control for about 6 weeks and then did a panel, like the hormone panel, just to see where I was, as far, because like I'm 49 right now. So I was about 45, 46 when this happened. So they wanted to see if I was premenopausal, menopausal, where I was with all that. And everything, the numbers turned out fine to where I'm not menopausal. So they said, hey, we're going to do this IUD and you will buy they because it lasts, it's a Moderna, and I don't know if the brand makes a difference, but like because of new developments, it's good for 5 to 7 years now, where it used to be 3 to 5. And so they said, by the time this one expires and we remove it, you'll probably be a good
Menopause.
chunk of the way into your menopause. So
Yeah, so in order for you to have high DHT and high testosterone, you have to have high luteinizing hormone. So if your luteinizing hormone is high, then it's interesting that there are things you can do to block luteinizing hormone. Okay. You can block it naturally, or you can block it by giving small doses of testosterone to shut it off, unless your entire mechanism is not working, meaning that normally when testosterone is elevated, and as well as DHT, dihydrotestosterone is elevated, it'll feed back and shut off negative feedback and shut off your luteinizing hormone production, which will cause your testosterone and DHT should drop, unless you're producing your testosterone from a secondary source. Okay. And the secondary source could come from the adrenal glands. So, looking at DHEA, which the majority of it comes from the adrenal glands. So, it's looking at a broad enough spectrum of hormones to really put the picture together. Think of the hormones as being pixels in a picture. And so, the fewer hormones that are run, the fewer pixels you have to see the picture. But getting more of the hormonal cascade gives you a little better understanding of that picture, gives you more clarity of that picture. And that's what we do in our 28 points. That's what they help us to see, is a clearer picture, as opposed to, your annual standard laboratory testing is really too low. It's like the HDL being elevated. High density lipoprotein that happen to have cholesterol is made up of two components, functional and non-functional. So you can have a great number on HDL, and the question is, well, is it mostly functional or non-functional? Same thing with LDL, the low density lipoprotein, or the lousy cholesterol to have. It has two components. It has a small density LDL, which is bad, and then a large density LDL, which is neutral. So when you take an LDL measurement, the question that needs to be asked is, how much of this number is one that I shouldn't care about, and how much of this number is the one I should care about? So the standard superficial cholesterol panel doesn't really give you a clarity. It gives you a generality. It doesn't give you a definition. It gives you a generality. Oh, your cholesterol is elevated. I mean, my cholesterol is, 300, 350, 375. But when I fractionated it, meaning looked at all these subcomponents, I was fine. I was fine. And then I get an ultra-fast CT scan of my heart every 3 years, and it's fine. There's no acceleration or no calcifications, the atherosclerotic calcifications. It doesn't see what we call plaque, not plaque. Why am I blanking on it? The soft plaque is what they like calling it, which are things that can thicken up the blood, and also possibly lead to obstruction of blood vessels in the heart and heart attack. But the good cholesterol is good, and the bad cholesterol is neutral. Okay.
And what do triglycerides indicate?
Well, it can indicate a number of things. It can indicate in people that have high insulin level, meaning that the insulin is not causing sugar to go into the cell and the cell believes that there is a deficiency of sugar, what it'll do is use other sources of fuel, like triglycerides and fatty acids, And, you know, when you go into fasting, that's what you stop using the primary energy molecule called glucose, and you switch over to fats as fuel, fasting and so forth. And triglycerides elevation could be from lack of or too much lipase, enzyme from the pancreas that is causing a breakdown. Fasting, certain triglyceremias, certain genetic predispositions can lead to that. Okay, it's not an area that I spend much time in. You know, I send it to a specialist who has similar kind of philosophies and triglycerides, but you want to make sure that your hormonal balance is optimal, because cholesterol comes from the liver. 85%, 90% of the cholesterol in your blood comes from the liver, and that is used to form part of the cell membrane of all our cells. Cholesterol, it's part of an integral part of the cell membrane. It also is a precursor to all those hormones we talked about. So if there is a block or inability of the body to take the cholesterol and convert it downstream to all the hormones our body needs, it backs up and goes up. And that's how we've been able to, with stimulating the individual's body to use the cholesterol, something called clomiphene citrate or E-clomiphene, which tells the body to increase the conversion of cholesterol down into the steroid hormones. And so what it does is starts draining the tank, you know, so you see the cholesterol level start to drop. Except in people who have very high levels of testosterone from injectable, what it does is says, oh, I don't need cholesterol to become testosterone because I'm injecting it into myself. So what happens is the cholesterol backs up because it's not moving forward to be used. So the tank starts filling up. So how we fix it is to make sure that the testosterone and the related hormones are all within normal ranges.
So here's what I know is a hot topic, and people generally find themselves on one of two ends of the, like, there is a lot of people don't seem to have a middle ground on. The VA just started, I think it was like towards the end of January, doing their research or trials about whether or not they should use MDMA for care for mental health. So is that something down the road that could potentially, or I mean, I know I'm asking you something that you may not, we probably don't even know yet. But is that something that could potentially be more beneficial for anybody who has cognitive issues in lieu of the other chemicals that we put in? Or is it only if it's in lieu of something else? I mean, how does
A
that work?
great question. You're talking about psychedelic-assisted therapy, and MDMA has been studied. There was a study out of Stanford, study out of Harvard with what is it? It's either ibogaine or ayahuasca. It's one of the psychedelics. There's, you know, MDMA. There's lysergic acid, LSD. There's ibogaine. There's ayahuasca, and there's psilocybin. Psilocybin in Texas is being studied at Baylor. Through a group that I participate with. And in Colorado and I think Oregon, it's legal. States are coming on board. South Carolina, it's, I believe there was a bill signed, or Arkansas. See, the South Carolina, Arkansas. So what's happening is what they're finding is that these psychedelics do have a benefit on antidepression. In my world, they're incredible as an additive for anti-inflammation. Also, understanding how some of these psychedelics work by turning on switches that might be off. And it's dealing with serotonin, DMT, dimethyltryptamine, all these other pathways that might be down, shut down because of neuroinflammation. In fact, I just had a article published on Psychedelic Spotlight, which is about how the area I work in, which is neuroinflammation and neuroendocrine system, that the neuroinflammation, the inflammation in the brain, can diminish the effectiveness of these psychedelic products because these psychedelic-assisted therapies, these plant-based products, for the most, are need to have healthy circuitry in the brain to work with. But inflammation denigrates, decreases the health of these neuroreceptors, neurotransmitters, chemical pathways, and so forth. So it means that there's an uphill battle by these products in order for them to work. And what we've seen is that, yeah, people with depression improves. They've been on a multitude of programs. Okay. We have a small population in our group, in our treatment regimen, who are resistant to treatment. And part of it's due to lifestyle, alcohol, drugs, medication, not eating well, not drinking well, not sleeping, not exercising, not doing all these lifestyle things that are beneficial and doing more things to hurt the life, your quality of life. And a number of these lifestyle issues, bad lifestyle issues, are affecting their recovery. So some of them end up going for out of the country and get psychedelic-assisted therapy, and they come back and they say, "Man, I feel much better." Okay, there are other things like HBOT, which is hyperbaric oxygen therapy. There's also light therapy, transcranial light, where they're using that red light, which drops the inflammatory cytokines in the brain. There's also transcranial magnetic stimulation, which helps with a magnetic field, helping them with their turning on cells, if you will, or improving neuroconductivity. There are, a number of other programs like peptides. There's a group of peptides, which are short proteins that actually stimulate turning on certain pathways in the brain to help repair the brain. Something called CEMAX, SEMAX, which helps in stroke patients and in cognitive. They're looking at it with, TBI-related PTSD, TBI kind of symptomatology. So peptides. So I have a number of bullets to shoot this problem down, so to speak. And it's just about allowing them to get into the light so people can see it. It's like the work that I do, it's partially in the light, it's partially obscured. And that's why, not a lot of people are aware of the work that we've done in 30 years, over 30 years. And it started 30 years ago with me having had my sixth head trauma, no loss of consciousness, and needing to be on an antidepressant that didn't work. I had treatment-resistant depression. Paxil was the drug that was given to me first. And it turns out that treatment-resistant depression can occur in people with vitamin D deficiency, growth hormone deficiency, DHEA deficiency, testosterone deficiency. So we look at all these factors relative to depression, and we have their history. Oh, I've been on 14 different medications in the past 5 years because they just weren't working. So my escape has always been to read. So in the course in the 90s, I started reading and came across these articles that said, "Hey, maybe you should have your hormones checked." And when I got my hormones checked, I was deficient in growth hormone, testosterone, and thyroid. And within 90 days of getting on to doses, appropriate treatment, my life came back to me. Now at 71 years of age, I'm doing things that was doing back in my 40s, both physical and mentally, reading like a crazy man, writing articles and what have you, and being in front of groups. I'm just getting ready to leave and speak to 2 days straight on the work that we do. So
And that's great. With this natural approach, I'm curious as to how true it is of the turmeric and is it curcumin?
Curcumin, yeah.
Yes. Are those actually good anti-inflammation foods or seasoning?
Yeah, they do have anti-inflammatory benefits, but I don't use them frontline. I might use them as maintenance because when someone comes to us and they have years of symptoms and a multitude of pharmacy, a lot of drugs, I want to use things that will get into the brain and drop the inflammation. If they want to take concurrent to what we're doing, curcumin, whatever it is, turmeric, curcumin, they can take it. We don't stop them. But my goal is to offer them a treatment that for the past 30 years, we've monitored and see where the benefits are at the dosing, the combinations, and so forth. And that's why about 5 years ago, we developed from our 16 years of work, products that are 100% natural that have been tested out in different military groups. Our last one was in 2020 with the Marines at Camp Pendleton with our core product called Brain Rescue 3, which works to not only clear out the cobwebs in the brain, the chemical cobwebs that are slowing you down without using any stimulants, to helping to stop the production of inflammatory chemicals, to the third component in there, which basically helps to increase your cell's ability to make energy in the mitochondria, to make ATP, because the brain needs extra energy to help repair itself. But what happens in this process of trauma is you lose energy power plants. Because of the just the nature of the inflammation, it shuts off and destroys cells that contain these mitochondria that generate ATP. So in our natural approach, we have almost 7,000 people who are on the natural program every month, and we see their benefits. They write in and say how they're doing. We've got more than 2,000 that are came into our complete program with laboratory testing and with the same nutraceuticals, and if need be, the hormones that they're deficient in.
The last episode of the podcast that I published was of he wrote a book called The Bipolar General. He didn't get diagnosed with bipolar until he had seen about seven different providers. One of the things that he said to me when he was explaining some of the things about his diagnosis was he said that when he had the mania or the manic episodes, that he had the overproduction of dopamine. And the question that I asked, I was like, wait, hold on. When we go to the gym or go on a walk, we want that extra dopamine. So why is that a problem if we, get too much of it?
Well, it's part of a system. Optimal amount of dopamine, the feel-good hormone, and you feel good. Not enough dopamine, you're sluggish. Too much dopamine, you're hyper. Okay? And it just so happens that pregnenolone and dopamine interact. So if you have low pregnenolone and high dopamine, what happens is you'll have increased edginess, agitation, emotional volatility, insomnia, panic attacks. Emotional volatility. You just fly off the handle. So, and bouncing around, and dopamine can cause that bouncing around. So the question is it truly purely a dopamine excess, or is it due to there not being enough pregnenolone to balance things out? Remember, everything in our body is a balance. So it's excited, it's excitatory, if it's up too high, but not in a good means. So we find in the blood we find a decrease in another hormone called prolactin. And the reason why prolactin is low is because dopamine is high. And you can listen, you can talk to the patients, read their symptoms, and then you see labs and it corroborates the fact that why they're edginess, agitated, insomniac is because there's a lack of this balance between dopamine and pregnenolone. So the
Okay.
question is, what else can cause dopamine to elevate? Well, certain medication like Effexor can cause your dopamine to go up. Natural products like mucuna pruritus, which is an herb that people take for energy, can cause your dopamine to go up. You can have a
Interesting.
hypersensitivity to it, you know, where it appears to be normal level for the average person, but for you, it's excess.
And that's one of the things that we did a Q&A with him where people in the audience were able to ask him questions. One of the, and I don't remember exactly what the question was, but one of the things that he did say was, he said, "I felt like I was Superman, and there that I would go without sleep." And he said, "Yeah, I had those depressive times too." He said, "But I was such a go-getter." And this is the thing that I added to it as well, that my take on it is, in the military, we look for that, what he was displaying. There's a reason why, he went through Ranger school, he was an engineer officer, and he made it to two-star general because he was that go-getter. He was that, "I'm accomplishing this, I'm accomplishing that," where and things ended up being a problem towards the end of his career, is that he said it ends up being that edginess and that, because a lot of people would go to his boss and say, "Hey, look, he's a good dude, but we can't tolerate this anymore," kind of thing. So that's how that ended up panning out. But I was just curious about that, about the dopamine. But I'm curious about something else. We've talked about depression and we've talked about TBI. Do they tie in together somewhere? Or are they just separate?
Absolutely. In one of the articles that I wrote, Neuroinflammation, The Road to Neuropsychiatric Illnesses, I explained the mechanism. When you have inflammation in the brain, a chemical is generated that they call peroxynitrite. Peroxynitrite selectively damages two enzymes. One of them is called hydroxylase, which is responsible for converting tryptophan to serotonin. If you don't have serotonin by standard perception, that will cause you to have depression. Well, it also influences a second enzyme called decarboxylase, which converts serotonin to melatonin. Melatonin is what helps you sleep. So if you don't get melatonin, you have insomnia. So in 100% of our veterans, we see three characteristic symptoms: depression, insomnia, and fatigue. And when you correct the inflammation, those disappear because the deficiency of the enzyme allowing your body to make serotonin and melatonin reverses. These are not permanent issues. As long as you don't throw things into the system, chemicals into the system which damage those circuits further. Okay. So sometimes there are medications that will, like statin drugs, can damage, irreversibly damage your pancreas relative to insulin.
I don't want
No
that.
one does.
Right.
No
So
one.
my question then would be, this, because I know you have something coming up in the not too far in the distant future, that you have to get to. But if for the veteran or even, I mean, I know football players have got and rugby players have got to have a lot of TBI opportunity as well. So I don't want to, completely leave them out. But for your veteran who is not in one of your programs, who is on a lot of medications, what are some natural things that they can do, or some things that they can do to help eliminate some of the problems they're having to deal with depression, anxiety, PTSD, TBI? Like, how can the, what can I do on my own?
Right. You know, there's a lot of data on fish oil, the omega-3s. A book by Colonel Michael D. Lewis called When Brains Collide was his thesis while he was in the actively in the military on how to benefit people who have traumatic brain injury and what the omegas do at high dosing, 10, 20,000 units, will drop the inflammation. And you go online and look at TBI and omega-3s, great articles out there. His book, which is on, I think it's on Amazon, is worth the cost for it because it gives you what to do. And in fact, I was just in Washington doing a presentation, and Dr. Lewis and Andrew Marr, Green Beret, that I work with, you know, we had dinner together and we spoke about some of the projects he's doing with Purely Omegas. Our program does incorporate one of Dr. Lewis's key omega called DHA. DHA, very important. Quercetin, very important. N-acetylcysteine or NAC is very important, which is natural products you get over the counter. DHEA, over the counter. Pregnenolone, over the counter. In fact, on my website, I list the doses for a natural approach to getting yourself better. And we have a 94-year-old Korean War veteran who had dementia. His dementia is gone. Okay. Yeah. And his son is Special Forces, who was called me about his father. And so he monitors and remind me, I'll send you the video he sent me of his father. As a thank you, he sent me this neat little video, minute and 47 seconds, his father talking about his transformation. And then that was at 3 months. And then he sent me another one at 6 months where he's on a television show talking about physical fitness and so forth. And you can tell he's even better at 6 months than when he was at 3 months. Very, very impressive stuff. And let's see. So on the website, which is the tbihelpnow.org, mm-hmm. under the science is something called the phase two protocol. And it has natural things, the dosing and when to take it after meals, you know, has very clear how to take it. And that was the protocol that we put Edward on. And it took him 70 days.
Wow.
To start resolving.
That's amazing.
Yeah, impressed. Now I've got a boxer who got pummeled in 1987, 88, and subsequently had a stroke. And for 30 years, he's been, you know, taken care of by his sister. And we started him 2 months ago on a protocol, a little bit more advanced protocol. And they're already videotaping him improved. He's not back to where he was, but after 30 years, in 2 months, according to them, he's about 20% better. More emotionally stable, more communicative, more independent. And having many videos of him prior to being on treatment by his sister and the people she works with.
I think that's awesome.
Very impressive. And we have a number of vets who didn't know what to do with life. Now they went through university, they became physician assistants, got their PhDs, their MBAs, they went back to school because the brain started to work. One of the areas that I do deal with, you know, I'm not a psychiatrist, not a psychologist, okay? I deal with the chemistry of the brain, and only thing I look at is the chemistry of the brain. Bring it back towards normal, and you'll see a lot of these symptoms disappear. So I'm not a psychiatrist, but we see in almost every single one of our patients improvement in their neuropsychiatric condition, whether or not that's depression, anxiety, bipolar, obsessive compulsion, or what have you. and they get significantly better so they can become more functional. They can have their family back. And one of the things that I do see is this illness mentality comes out. And what that means is that people who have lived in a state of diminished capacity assume that that is all they'll ever be, and they fixate on that. They fixate on that, where they don't allow themselves to get better. And, you know, we have a few people who have done that, and that's my greatest obstruction or obstacle, mm-hmm. is the fact that according to everything on the labs, and though the labs are numbers, I treat people. Mm-hmm. The numbers help to guide me, but it's the person. And I see that people are like stuck, you know, they're frozen in a state of mind, not allowing themselves to experience being better. So sometimes what I do is I stop their treatment and they come back to me 2 to 4 weeks later and says, "Doc, I didn't realize how much better I really was until you stopped it." Mm. Then we put them back on to treatment. Because sometimes they need a little bit of shock to see, hey, I didn't realize that I was better.
And that is, you know, that is something that's hard. It is a vicious cycle. One of the things that I'm doing right now is seeing a chiropractor for my back pain in hopes that I can ditch the nerve pain medications. But he shared a very similar sentiment. He said, "I wish people would not cut their sessions short and thinking that they've arrived at the best that they can be." And what ends up happening is people will do X number of sessions with him. They feel better. Then their posture ends up going back to a bad place because they're not trying to maintain it. And then they have to start from scratch because they haven't kept up with it. And he says, look, it's, you know, kind of like what you're saying. He said, it's not about getting that percentage of a disability. It's about getting better.
Correct.
And it's about improving your health. And in the veteran community, there is a lot of, hey, I'm all about doing what I can do to make sure that I'm 100% service connected. But once you get that, then what? You're still in pain, right? You still hurt. You still have an injury or illness.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yep. So my goal, obviously, is to get people back to their highest level of performance that they can be.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And fortunately, I do have a majority of our veterans who really want to get off their medication, who really want to get back into the game of life. They want to challenge themselves. So I have guys that are waking up in the morning and say, "I'm going to run a marathon." Have you run a marathon before? No. So why? I just feel that I can do it. I'm going to do it. So I've got a couple of guys. One of the guys was in the movie Quiet Explosions.
Okay.
Kevin woke up one morning and just said, "I'm going to run a marathon." 6 months later, he runs a marathon, Boston Marathon.
Wow.
A guy here, a civilian here, Sam, woke up and said the same thing. "I've never run a marathon. I feel good enough. I want." And that's their challenge. That's their feedback. Mm-hmm. They're saying, "Am I better or am I not better? Well, let me go do something crazy like run a marathon."
Mm-hmm.
You know, put the investment of time in to slowly go from 1 mile to 3 to 5 to 7 to whatever until you're, you know, up to the 26 miles so you can go and run the LA Marathon.
Wow.
And they both ran Los Angeles and the other one in Boston, completed it in a reasonable time.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Shoot, I think completing it is good enough.
I'm there with you. I don't care what the time is.
Right.
Just make sure I crawl over the finish line, you know,
mm-hmm.
whatever it takes to go over the finish line.
I mean, I'm about that too. You know, like my uncle completed within the time needed to an Ironman.
Oh, sure.
And there was something about if you don't do the entire Ironman and complete it within whatever this time limit was, you can't call yourself an Ironman. So he said, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to go all the way and I'm going to get that title Ironman. And he sure enough did. But
lots of credit.
You know, this sentiment or thought is coming from somebody, me, who really struggles with major depression. I mean, to sit here and think about myself being in a place where I could run like I did in my 20s. I mean, I'm in my 40s, so, but to be able to run like I did when I was on active duty, generally, and I'm only 5 foot tall, like no extra inches, not a half inch. I'm short. Yet I was the first female to always finish, and I'd finish ahead sometimes of the slower men. Not that they were slow, but just the last few men that would go through. And I loved it. I loved the adrenaline. I loved that, I guess, the dopamine. I just, when I was done running, I
You
was
felt
ready.
good.
I could tackle the rest of the day.
Right. Endorphins and Keflins, these are brain hormones that are positive. Now, dopamine, growth hormone helps. A lot of positive things from running.
Well, I'm only 5 feet tall, so I definitely miss that growth bit. I'm kidding, of course. I really appreciate you doing this. I mean, if nothing else, I'm already educated, and I'm sure many other people will be too. I mean, I just stuff you don't know and you don't think about until
Right.
someone like you brings it up.
Yeah, well, my goal is to make awareness of there being an alternative and complementary means by which those who have sustained a traumatic or non-traumatic physical or non-physical injury that influences your mental well-being, your mental health, your brain health, and influences your cognition, your socialization, your life's course. That is the focus, and that's why we work on cutting-edge approaches, which are all from the literature. There's nothing that I'm doing that I made up. It's all come out of the literature. Yes, I might take 1,000 articles that I've read, and the information that's contained in that, I will synthesize it together to come up with a product, something that helps, okay? And something that can help to heal and help to move you out of this space that you're in right now, advance you to the next level. And then to the next level until you reach that level, which is your comfort zone, the level that you've always sought after. So there's no depression, anxiety, there's no PCOS, hopefully, get you into that level. And you don't know if it's going to work unless you try. And this is, how can you prove, can you guarantee that your treatment? I can't guarantee anything. But we have over 9,023, 27 people who are on different protocols, and they're getting better one at a time. That is the key. But if you don't do anything, you can't get better. I mean, there's nothing. And most of the medication that is being used is not to heal from the insult, but it's just to make it easier for you to deal with it, right?
Right.
What we're looking to do is resolve, mitigate the problems.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing for me as it relates to the depression piece, that I feel like I have maxed out medications. I get a medication, it seems to work. We max out that one, we go to another one. We max that one out, we go to another one. And it's just such a, for me, the person going through it seems like, it seems like it's such a vicious cycle to get me nowhere. And then to me, that's like, that's depressing within itself. Like, I mean, because I mean, I am in a, I mean, I'll be 49 this month, and I've been on these medications for so long, but I don't want to be on them. So if there is something that I can do to feel better and function better, why not? And it's going to take work on my part, which is the part that nobody likes. I just want to snap my fingers and it be done.
That would be great.
But my fingers
We
don't have
all.
that kind of power. Yep.
Oh, neither do mine.
No.
Not at all.
You'd be making some
But
money if you did.
making knowledge available, awareness available or commonplace that there are alternatives. That's the key. I mean, the fact that it would, what we try to do is we treat people so they don't need treatment. At some point, you know, we just had a 56-year-old major from Fort Hood who, after 6 months, got off of eight medications, and he basically stopped our treatment because he said, "I'm good. Okay, we're just monitoring him, see how good he stays, you know." And we have people who have left us, you know, after 30 days, after, excuse me, after 90 days, after 180 days, after a year, after 2 years. We'd like to see in 90 days at least a 50% improvement. That was our Marine study in 2020. 65% of them were 50 to 100% better in 90 days on our nutraceutical approach. So we know it works, and we keep on testing it, you know, with both military and civilians out there, with NFL, NHL, with motocross, with MMA boxers. This guy that I'm working with now, boxer, with a stroke after his last bout. So it's working, you know, it's working. We're about 77% improvement, excuse me, 77% of our people are 50 to 100% better in a year.
That's
Okay.
good. That's a good number.
That's a very good number. In my presentation on a 3-year study that we did with the military, it was an 79.8%, 79.8% improvement. It was the presentation I did for federal healthcare workers in Maryland.
Okay, in
Oh.
Bethesda.
No, we flew into DC, Washington, Reagan, and then we went to Hotel Gaylord, Gaylord National, where it was a convention, AMSUS, AMSUS, which is the Association of Federal Healthcare Workers, which is mostly military. And so I had an opportunity to share a presentation with them, two-hour blocks of time for 2 days, so a
Oh,
total
wow.
of 8 hours of presenting the project. And some people were interested, other people didn't know what to make of it because it's outside the box.
What?
Everything
Say
I
it ain't
do,
so.
I'm outside the box, but it's all based on science that exists. I'm just a reader, and you know, I memorize stuff that's there and then integrate it together and come up with approaches. So our laboratory testing and our product line, which is, you know, it's working very well. So.
I am just, I'm super excited about that. And to see how things start to change and evolve within the military and within the VA system, because and that is a hard sell, I think, because we do and have a cookie cutter of this is how things should be. This is what healthcare should look like. And you're saying, well, look, since you like science, since you like this and that, let me tell you what works, but you're going to have to step a little bit back and outside that box
Right.
to get it.
Yep.
But what do we know?
Yeah, that's what I say. What do I know? So I keep on reading so I can know a little bit more.
Yes.
You know, I get called to explain things to, you know, other doctors called to have me explain some of the stuff. Every Sunday, I send out an article which looks at a focal area of neuroendocrine as it might influence psychological, cognitive, or physical functioning. So that I've been doing it for 8 years now,
Wow.
almost 9 years, 8 years every Sunday, 1 o'clock in the morning, send it out. Last one was on pregnenolone, progesterone, and allopregnanolone, and how it functions to give us our anti-depression, anti-anxiety, and sleep.